Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve Kim, and pinch hitting for Gabriel Montoya, who's attending to some personal business, is the pride of Modesto and the founder of the LITR radio network, David Duenas. David, welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure as always. It's been a while since me and you've done a show together. So I'm excited.
Yes, and there's a lot to talk about. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Open up those phone lines in about 20 minutes. If you want to tweet us a question, comment, or critique, you could do so at SteveUCNLive. Our format is still the same. We're going at least 90 minutes all the way up to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and we have overtime championship rounds going all the way up to 9 p.m. if need be. But let's get started with round number one, and it's showtime. From the Cintas Center in Cincinnati, Ohio, what is now a welterweight bout. Talk about that more in a moment. Adrian Broner takes on the rugged, tough Adrian Granados. And in another welterweight co-feature, it's the return of Lamont Peterson taking on David Avanesyan. Mr. Duenas, the question is very simple. When they move this fight at the behest and at the request of Team Broner, from 142 to 147, did that take away any realistic chance of Adrian Granados pulling the upset on Saturday night?
I don't think so. I mean, was it really going to be an upset? I personally thought that it'd be an upset if Broner won the fight. I mean, I just can't picture. I mean, he went on Showtime talking about being serious. Well, I guess he wasn't that serious, right? So I think everything weighs on Broner, not on Adrian.
Yeah, I think we need another tear-jerking sit-down interview with Mark Kriegel with the cutaways and the dramatic shots. Here's my opinion. I thought Granados, one of the ways he was going to win this fight, whether you call it an upset or not, was being the guy that was going to be in superior condition,
right,
grind away, and have a guy in Adrian Broner who obviously I don't think has the discipline anymore to make anywhere between 140 or 142. If we go back to recent history, his last fight in 2016, he lost his WBA 140-pound title by not being able to make the junior welterweight limit and then abdicating the belt on the scales against Ashley Theophane. According to Adrian Granados, Dave, who I talked to about, 24 hours ago, he said he was given notice of this change in weight 3 weeks ago. Dave,
wow.
Adrian Broner must be really, really heavy if it's not even this recent, this request. I'm beginning to think it may even be a question if he can make the 147-pound limit that was just newly instituted.
I mean, he's so heavy topped. It's just crazy watching him this past, Friday, right? I looked at his upper body, and when I'm thinking about him saying it's going to make, he wants to make it 147, I'm actually thinking, there's more padding there for him to survive in the later rounds because, he's not going to have any legs. He's going to be stuck in the mud, and I think that's where Godonis is going to have his opportunities is to just keep landing on him, and it's going to help out Adrian to absorb it, but at the same time, it's going to take off, it's going to take him to a beating that I'm not going to say undeserved because, you keep missing weight, you keep being undisciplined, so I guess it is deserved that you're going to take a beating.
Dave, in this sport, you get what you deserve, and you deserve what you get. And if there was
Absolutely.
Any karma based on recent history, then we had the fiasco against Vicente Escobedo about 4 or 5 years ago. But it points out the inequity of this sport, that an A-side in Broner can basically change the goalpost, change the rules, manufacture a weight class on the run against Granados, who said in a conference call last week, it was basically a take-it-or-leave-it situation. Now, my understanding is there is a financial bonus that is being given to Adrian Granados, and the number that I heard, it's not all that overwhelming. He is making a career-high payday, and Dave, when I did ask him, how much did you get for changing the weight? How much did those 5 pounds benefit your bottom line? His answer was, I can't talk about it. Dave, the question is very simple then. If you're Adrian Granados, would you have accepted this fight at all costs, given the fact that, let's face it, tomorrow is not promised to you, you're not with Al Heyman, you're not one of the PBC poster boys, you've always been an opponent. Did Granados really have no choice but to accept this fight? And also, let's go further. That if Adrian Broner should weigh in at 149.5 on Friday, is he still under that pressure to take this fight at, by all means necessary?
I would say no. I mean, if he comes in at 149 to 150, I think the only thing with Granados is that he's, you know, he's kind of tweeted out in the past, he wants these big fights. He wants these big money fights. So the only one that's cornering himself is him. So I think that's going to be a question that's going to be left on the night that they step into the ring or they step into the locker rooms to find out what is going to be the real weight that they're going to be stepping in against each other when it comes to when the bell rings.
So Adrian Broner takes on Adrian Granados now in what is a full-blown 147-pound welterweight contest. I know people are going to say, Dave, Steve is making too much out of it. He's fought at 147 before. Granados' last fight was at 144.5. But this much I know,
right,
in talking to trainers, certain fighters belong at certain weights. That's why you have weight classes. This is why these things are negotiated. I've seen a lot of fighters where a weight class, whether it's from 140 to 147 to 154 to 160, folks, size matters. This is why you have weigh-ins. This is why you have weight classes. This is why these things are negotiated and fought for. Here's my opinion on this fight. I think either way it's going to provide action. I think there's going to be a lot of good two-way activity. I think there's going to be a lot of punches thrown and landed. But I just wonder, if Broner is in reasonable shape given the new set of circumstances, I think at 47, he's simply too big and too strong. Dave, I'm not calling this an upset or a victory that should happen for Broner, given the fact I think there's great doubt on just what type of physical shape he's in. But I'm going to stay safe. I will stay with the chalk. I think Granados is gutty. I think he's tough. I think he's going to be in Broner's face all night long. But Broner, I think, will get his hands raised in victory at the end of 12 hard rounds.
There's a strong possibility. I mean, the thing with Broner coming in with that, like I said, he's really heavy topped. He's going to be able to absorb punches from Granados. He's going to be able to push him back, walk him down. Granados' only chance is to keep throwing, because what we've seen from Adrian Broner in the past is he's a 1-2, you know, shot fighter, and that's it. You know, he doesn't like to collect any more combinations. He tries to walk you down with his shoulder. So there's gonna have to be a lot of step around. But he's not, you know, Granados isn't facing Broner. He's facing those judges too. So it really depends on who's pocket and who when it comes to those judges.
And keep this in mind, Adrian Granados, since that big upset victory over Amir Imam back in late November of 2015, he was mismanaged to a point where he had one fight all of last year. So he's not exactly coming in off a lot of momentum in 2016. Dave, what did Lamont Peterson do to piss off the PBC? Why is this his first fight in about a year and three quarters or a quarter? I don't get it. I still remember watching his fight against Felix Diaz, one, quite frankly, he may have not won, on the same afternoon that Gennady Golovkin fought David Lemieux. on NBC on a Saturday afternoon. That was October 17th, 2015. And now he's matched up with a pretty solid guy that I saw last year ringside. I called this fight for CBS Sports when David Avanesyan decisioned Shane Mosley. I think Lamont Peterson's always gotten a little bit of a bad rap, given the fact that I think he's a pretty good action fighter, likes to work
right
inside, good solid tools, willing to fight anybody. But again, Dave, question's very simple. Why was he benched?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that we've learned from Lamont is he's going to go for it. You know, he's going to go out there and he's going to showcase and he's going to try his best. But let's not forget, you know, he's been tested positive. That certainly put a major setback. I don't know how much more is left in the tank for him. I mean, he's went from his first stage being a fighter as a mover, as a boxer, to this stage of a fighter. And I think we're now into the third stage of what you're talking about. You know, I don't know if there's that much left in Lamont Peterson, and especially against David. It's a tough, tough, gritty guy, which you saw last that, when you had called that fight. Really, really tough guy there.
Yeah, and I think ring rust matters. As they say, rust don't sleep. And Avanesyan's pretty solid. He's a guy that can switch shit. He's got above-average power, above-average tools. It pains me to say it, but I think Lamont Peterson will be a victim of circumstance. Dave, again, I'm not saying it's an upset because I really don't know the odds. Give me Avanesyan to win this fight. I think Lamont Peterson has died on the vine.
I give Avanesyan a TKO over Lamont Peterson. I just think, you know, Lamont is going to still go out there with the same stripes that we've seen. He's going to want to trade. He's going to want to try to, you know, bang off the rust. And it's going to just fall in play for David.
And going through some headlines here, Dave, I find this very interesting as we look ahead to the boxing calendar. Bob Arum for the past 2 months has told everybody, hey, we're going to do a world tour with Manny Pacquiao. We're going to go to Australia. Okay, so they announced the Jeff Horn fight, who basically the only way that Jeff Horn could be a household name in boxing is if it's in Australia down under. Well, it came out over the weekend and announced by Mike Conn and Manny Pacquiao himself over various forms of social media. Looks like they're going to fight in either Abu Dhabi or Dubai.
Right.
And I posed this question to Bob about a month ago, and he kind of poo-pooed it and said, no, we're all on the same team here. Dave, do you get the sense that Mike Conn, the advisor of Pacquiao, and Bob Arum are not on the same page as it relates to the immediate future of the Pac-Man?
Oh, yes. I mean, they're both saying two different things. You could tell there's no communication. I mean, when Bob was even selling this, and I remember everybody was, like, giving it hell, the announcement of you know, Horn getting the opportunity at Manny Pacquiao. But the way Bob kind of sold that to the public was it made sense. But it seems like, you know, Pacquiao and his advisors, they're thinking other things in other ways. Maybe, I don't know. Let me ask you this. Is this in some way they're trying to say they don't want to go to Australia? So they're not going to, you know, they're acting like they're not communicating with Bob in some way. Maybe they are communicating with them. What do you think?
You know, here's a theory that I have, and I've talked to people about this that are closer to the situation than you and I. Manny Pacquiao, for his last fight against Jesse Vargas, took a severe haircut. I'm talking about the type of haircut you get when you first join the military. They gave you a buzz cut. His minimum, which was right around $20 million, got shaved all the way to $5 million. I think Pacquiao was willing to do that one time.
Right.
Don't know if he's willing to go to supercuts all over again. And the reason why Mike Conn, I think, was insistent on Abu Dhabi or Dubois is because they can get a bigger site fee because they want every single dime out of this. And, you know, I get it. Boxing is a business. But if you're going to do a world tour, you got to at least use local fighters, and that has to make geographic sense. Listen, was this always a money grab? Of course it was. Boxing is one big money grab after another, but at least Jeff Horn in Australia made sense, and it's
right.
Australia. Dave, be honest. If you're a guy with disposable income and your hobby was to travel all around the world to go to big sporting events, specifically boxing, where would you rather go, Brisbane or Abu Dhabi?
Oh,
let's be
man.
Honest. I mean, who in the right mind right now in America is saying, you know where I want to go and spend my cash as an American because we're so popular right now in our geopolitical climate? Let's go to the Middle East. I'm sure everyone will love us there. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, the money grab is not what they're going to get, you know, across from them in the ring is the money grab is that site fee. So they're doing their part as being smart businessmen, but it's not really that smart if that's not going to bring the crowd to them, right? I don't know. They know much more than we do, I guess, you know, when it comes to that
and
land
if you're
of a state.
And if you're going to toot the horn, pun fully intended, again, that makes sense in Australia. In
right.
Abu Dhabi or Dubois, you're better off with Amir Khan or Saddam Ali. That's just a reality. And there's other factors here. Is this event going to be on HBO? Will it be on pay-per-view? I do know this. Looking at the California State Athletic Commission schedule, which I did last night, Top Rank has a hold on the StubHub Center in Carson, California, that very same day. My understanding is there's going to be some sort of split-site doubleheader where Manny Pacquiao will go on this world tour, but the likes of Oscar Valdez, Gilberto Ramirez, and Jesse Magdaleno, they will perform on that date in that venue. Speaking of a fight, it looks like it's going to happen thanks to the IBF. Their welterweight champion, Kell Brook, is going to indeed take on his mandatory, Kell Brook, May 20th in Sheffield, England. Dave, I'll admit, I did not think Kell Brook would make his way back down to welterweight, and I really thought that maybe Errol Spence represented a little bit too much risk for the reward at hand. I tip my cap to Special K.
I do too. I mean, because how many times we've seen fighters jump up, mass up with muscle, and then try to cut back down, and they don't look the same. So for Spence to take, you know, this is a good opportunity for Spence. This is, there's a lot more riding for Brook, obviously, is to get back down to back to the weight that was struggling to make, and to see how well he does. I mean, you know, he's got to now cut back some of the muscle. So it's really interesting. I didn't think it was going to happen either, but now we see it is going to happen. So I'm just hoping for a good fight now.
Dave, gut feel. Who wins this fight, Spence or Brook? I'll be honest, and this is not American bias, but I think the world of Kell Brook, but everything you talked about in terms of cutting back down weight, which usually at a certain point is a point of diminishing returns, I think it's a 50-50 fight, gun to head. I will go with the young gun, Errol Spence, even on foreign turf.
Same here. You got to. Like I said, you know, there's a lot against – you know, Brook right now because of cutting that weight. You know, the big complaint is he couldn't make the weight, so he decided to move up. He goes in he takes a pretty good beating from Triple G. Now he's thinking coming back down. And, you know, Spence is a young gun. And this guy's hungry. He's fast. His combinations are always on point. He's got great footwork. You know, for you to figure out whether or not you're going to be comfortable at a weight you said you couldn't make anymore, that's a hell of a way of finding out going in front of a guy like Spence.
And moving on here, another headline. We all know that Gennady Golovkin, March 18th, takes on Daniel Jacobs on HBO pay-per-view from the famed Madison Square Garden. There are more and more rumors percolating that Golovkin and K2 are negotiating a deal for them to fight June 10th in Kazakhstan, centered around the World Expo 2017. Here's what I find very interesting, Dave. When I spoke to Tom Loeffler last Wednesday afternoon at the summit in Big Bear, he said, yeah, I've kept in contact with Frank Warren, who promotes BJ Saunders, just as I have with Golden Boy regarding Canelo. Now, the Canelo fight, if it should happen, is in September. So fighting March 18th, should you come out clean and victorious, fighting in June would not be out of the questions. And there have been more and more tweets basically saying it's a done deal. texted it over to Mr. Loeffler. I said, do you want to reply or give a comment? And I tweeted this earlier this morning. He says, no comment. We're just focusing in on March 18th. Nothing's done. You know, Dave, he didn't exactly confirm it. He certainly didn't deny it either, did he?
No. No, he didn't.
Hmm. I get the sense, and again, and not going into the mind of Tom Loeffler, but in talking to him in the past, if you go back to last year, first third of the year, they got bogged down in the WB situation with Saul Canelo Alvarez. Then in the second half, they got kiboshed as the Danny Jacobs negotiations lingered on past New Year's. I have the very, very strong suspicion and gut feel that Golovkin absolutely hated fighting twice in a year and not at least three times, that everyone there is under marching orders, and that their stated goal is that we are not going to let negotiations slow down our path. If the fights happen, they happen, but we will proceed. And I get the sense Golovkin could fight as much as four times this year, which I think would be outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you keep the wheel turning, you keep it oiled, and, you know, you just pray for the best, you know, when you're going uphill. I don't blame him. I mean, why are you going to put all your eggs in one basket and wait like other managers and promoters have done? And, you know, it just ends up spending somebody's prime on basically sitting on the couch and waiting. I commend these guys. They're not playing the waiting game. Allow them to do what they do. I mean, he's a fighter. Like you've said before, he's a fighter, and that's what fighters do. They fight.
Well, theoretically, they should want that. And Dave, I've been asked on Twitter a few times. They said, Steve, what makes you think that B.J. Saunders now all of a sudden, after turning down a very lucrative deal to face Golovkin in England, what makes him so ready and anxious to go to Kazakhstan? Very simple. His mandatory is due. And last week it was reported by various entities like Mitch Abramson that B.J. Saunders negotiated a step-aside fee with his mandatory contender, the very, very tough spark plug of Antal Kursaize. So the bottom line is this. When your mandatory is looming, that puts a deadline on you. And let's be very honest about this. This is a fact. B.J. Saunders, since winning the title against Andy Lee in December of 2015, because of various snafus, he didn't get to cash in on that title. He didn't get to parlay that belt into financial riches. He fought all of once. So basically now he gets one more optional defense before he has to face Kursaize again, who again, tough, rough, physical
customer.
Guy. So at this point, with that deadline looming, okay, with that pressure that, hey, you may have to face this mandatory, well, if the offer's good enough, as they say, half passport will travel. Dave, I was told late this week from various sources that the Garden City grudge match, the long-awaited duel between Victor Ortiz and Brandon Rios, will be announced sometime this week for April 2nd, which, yes, is a Sunday afternoon. Yes, this fight is certainly past its sell-by date, but do you still anticipate this fight?
I don't know if I'll anticipate it. I think it's one of those things where, well, if it's there and it's going to happen, why not?
Dave, I'm with you. I think the fact that both guys, I don't want to say shot, but let's say faded or past their physical prime, I'm okay with that. In situations like this, there's so much passion and hatred and animosity that, you know
what?
Dulled reflexes may actually make for better fights. And anything that leads to more punches being thrown and landed, I'm not one to get in the way and oppose that. And I would rather see these guys fight on a big stage than rather in some bar 20 years from now. This is a fight that you always got the sense with the political backdrop. One guy was with PBC or Golden Boy. Rio spent most of his career at Top Rank. You always said to yourself, man, it's really a shame that they can't get together. And then there almost became this foreboding attitude, like, it's too bad they missed each other. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know what? I don't know what other options they have. This has the classic feel of a loser leaves town fight. I'm good with it. I think it'll be entertaining. And, Dave, I think it is absolutely appropriate that April 2nd is also WrestleMania, because this certainly has a WWE feel to it. One source tells me it looks like it might be on Fox on a Sunday afternoon, most likely at a Southern California venue. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's go to the Twitter timeline. We'll start with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy, who has a question that I believe can be answered next week. So what does Gabe think of the drug testing situation surrounding Anthony Joshua and Errol Spence? Again, we will table that question for next week when Mr. Montoya is back here on his post. Here's a question from Orlando Ortiz. When is Tim Bradley coming back? Also, what's next for Burkelt? Well, Burkelt, I believe, will be fighting Tak Miura as part of the WBC mandate for winning that fight on January 28th. Dave, I've tried to get answers from Tim Bradley and his wife slash manager. I haven't gotten any calls back.
Good luck.
I'm not getting much back from Top Rank. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea what's going on with the Desert Storm.
No, it's, you know, he's out there alone in the desert for sure right now. It's really hard to get a hold of him.
You know, and if the truce between Top Rank and Al Heyman is really something to be taken seriously, I think Tim Bradley should be paired up with like a Sean Porter or the winner of Garcia Thurman. But again, we do not live in a perfect world. Here's Ivan Arroyo asking, do you see Chocolatito Roman Gonzalez never rematching Estrada, a sign of things to come for Cuadras? Okay, before we answer that, Dave, do you believe the heat was a little bit too much for Chocolatito back in September, and that's why he backed up the rematch and did not take another crack at Cuadras on March 18th?
I think we got to realize that, you know, fighters are human too. They got to recover. And, you know, I'm pretty sure he realized he was in a really, really tough fight. Cuadros, you know, he brought it to him. And when's the last time we had seen Chocolatito get into such a physical, gruesome type of back and forth, you know, fight like that? So I don't blame him to go immediately saying, hey, I want to go back into that trench and, you know, go through the mud one more time. I'm going to see what else is out there, venture out there. And then when Cuadros makes sense again, let's do it all over. So I don't give him a lot of heat for it at all. Absolutely not.
Dave, I remember looking at Roman Gonzalez ringside September 10th at the Forum and looking at the up-close pictures they took and they sent out to us media. One thing was very evident. That's the most physically grueling, tough fight Chocolatito has ever had. He was really bruised up, marked up, and swollen. And I said, wow, that's a tough fight. Keep this in mind, Ivan. The WBC has mandated that the winners of the fights on March 18th on the Golovkin-Jacobs undercard involving Chocolatito and Cuadras must fight each other next. So there is a sanctioning body mandate. Here's one from Joshua. Salido Miura, is it possible for April or whenever HBO is on next? And did you hashtag get the memo on Spence? Okay, the hashtag is going right over my head. Please explain that to me. But as for Salido Miura, again, I believe that Miura and Burkelt are mandated to fight by the WBC. Sean Givens has told me, who is the advisor for Series Salido, that April 29th they'll be having a tune-up fight in Mexico as they kind of work out the options for the tough Mexican warrior. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and please keep sending your tweets in to @SteveUCNLive. We're here for at least another hour. It is David Duenas pinch hitting for Gabriel Montoya. Dave?
I'm wondering, Josh, I wonder if is he trying to say that hashtag get the memo on Spence? Is Memo Heredia working with Spence? Is that what's being thrown room around or what?
No, unless he makes his training camp in Mexico. I think that's something.
Right. Yeah.
No, I don't think it's that. But, no. Okay, listen, we have another hour to go at least. Dave, who's on the phone lines?
Let's go with the first caller here. I've been waiting patiently. Area code 860. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing? It's CT.
CT, welcome aboard.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend's fights. I think it's interesting, but I do think the, you know, moving up to 147 will have a advantage for Broner in this fight.
CT, did you give Granados much of a shot at 42, knowing what we know about Broner?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I think, you know, that weight class, I think Granados will have a better chance. But I do think at 147, the weight will play a big part in this fight, just because, you know, I think Broner probably will carry the weight a little bit better.
I agree. I've seen fights where a guy absolutely stretches himself and starves himself and saunas himself to shave away those last 2-3 pounds. And fights can be won or lost at the scales. And I just felt, I know the way Granados is. He's a disciplined kid, doesn't live a very flamboyant lifestyle, doesn't have a lot on his plate. I thought it was a huge advantage. And then when you go back up north 5 pounds, that I just think, and again, I could be dead wrong because I don't know what's going on inside these guys' bodies or their diets, thought the pendulum swung right back to the problem in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I agree. And I meant to ask you guys a question about Renato's style. I know some people like to compare him to Maidana, but I think Renato's has, you know, a really good he has very good punch volume, but I don't think he carries the same type of pop, you know, as Maidana, or maybe even the type of pressure that, you know, that gave Broner trouble in the past, because I don't think he punches very well off the back foot like he's shown against Porter, and to an extent to Ponce de Leon. He doesn't seem to time his punches very well punching off the back foot, but I do think, you know, in this instance, I think that the weight will have a lot to do with the, you know, the power of Broner and the less power of Granados.
I don't disagree. I mean, Dave, let's be honest. As grinding and physical a style as Granados has, he does not have the one-punch kick of Chino Maidana. And that alone makes it very clear he ain't Chino Maidana.
That's it. Yeah, he's not Chino Maidana at all, you know. You know, like I mentioned before, too, with Broner, with that added weight, it's an added padding. It's going to absorb a lot of punishment. And I think that Granados is going to have to, he can't come just straight forward. He's got to get some angles because he will be walked back by the bigger guy.
CT, anything else?
No, just definitely looking forward to Brooke and Spence once they fight. I think you guys bring up some good points earlier. It's a big test for both fighters. I've been reading a lot of stuff about just people picking Spence, but if Brooke feels comfortable at the weight, which I agree with you guys, I think with him coming down from 160, it's going to be a big task on his body. And as we saw in history, it's been very clear that fighters who've lost a lot of muscle weight, like Roy Jones, even Tarver to an extent to Hopkins, you know, we've seen it doing their best once they went back down in weight. And I think that would be a clear advantage for Spence. But like I was saying, I think if Brooke comes in, you know, healthy, if he can make the weight comfortably, I do think it's a very competitive fight for both fighters.
Agreed. CT, thank you very much. And Dave, we got to point this out. Can we give a round of applause to Kell Brook? This is a guy in back-to-back fights has taken on Golovkin and Errol Spence.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing, too, is, you know, with Brook jumping up, and you saw the difference in his body. I mean, he was much bulkier, more muscular. And, you know, they went on that route of not trying to fatten up and be comfortable. They wanted to get muscled up so that they can actually bully Triple G. And it, you know, and it worked to an extent, but it didn't go to the, you know, it didn't sway the way they wanted to go. Now, my curiosity is, because this is a brave move, it's cutting now that muscle. How are they doing it? Are they doing it properly? And is that the main focus to try to get and try to make that weight? So it's courageous, but it's dangerous at the same time. But yeah, you got to applaud them.
And here's the other factor. I think them waving the towel and cutting that fight just when they did, that was not a beating. I mean, listen, he suffered a hairline fracture. in the face. So he basically had a broken face. But it didn't become something where you said, wow, they shaved years off that career. The corner did himself or themselves a favor by understanding that there was a long-term future. They're in a bit of a no-lose situation for that particular fight. And there was footage of Kell Brook about 4 or 5 weeks after that fight actually getting ready in the gym for some sort of fight, whether it was Amir Khan. I also heard last week that Eddie Hearn reached out to Miguel Cotto. But with that being said, you signed on for the fight, and this being a title fight, there will be no bronering of the contract. The weight class is 147. There is no wiggle room, or you lose your belt. Dave, who's next?
Let's go with area code 787. You're on live right now in the next round. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys.
Hello, is this Javier?
Yeah, I am.
Javier, where have you been? We miss your smooth, dulcet tones.
Well, I've been recuperating from the bruises because I was driving the Verdejo bandwagon.
I'm glad I had my seatbelt on. Javier, let's get into this. I wrote about this last week. Is it time for Verdejo to leave the safe, friendly confines of Puerto Rico and go to a new gym and trainer?
To be quite honest with you guys, I think it's time to throw it to the Lions and see what he got. You know, it's been Auburn has done what they usually do with prospects, but the learning curve of Verdejo stopped like 2 years ago. And believe me, I was the first one on the bandwagon. But if it was me, if you are not going to put it with the Pedro Flanagan, let's put it with Juan Diaz and see what's happened. Because if not, we are wasting our time.
I have never seen a young man, and trust me, I was high on him. You could read my archives. I'm not going to try to hide it. I'm not going to try to get those expunged. What I wrote is what I thought, and it is what it is. But I've never seen a young man who was so highly regarded as a prospect who, without losing, actually became a suspect. It's unprecedented.
I really think, Steve, when he injured his hands in Orlando, something in his mind changed. He didn't trust his hands anymore. And when your mind changes as a fighter, even if you haven't lost, when your mind changes as a fighter, you are no longer what you used to be.
Dave,
two more things.
When you watch Felix Verdejo now, are you utterly bored?
I feel like I'm sleepwalking when I'm watching him. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, there's got to be something, right? You know, I don't know. I have to agree with you, Javier, that there's something there that I think mentally it's restricting him to let it go, to let that fighting spirit that we once saw. Does Top Rank do a Jose Benavidez Jr. finally just throw him out there and see what they can get out of him after the investment they've done? I kind of agree with you, but then I don't agree with you on doing that yet, you know? I don't know, Steve. I think I still might have a little bit of hope. I've been a big critic of him since the beginning, but I think that, you know, I think maybe another fight. Let's see where he's at, and then if not, then, yeah, we throw him in with the Lions.
But, you know, listen, here's what I believe, and I've canvassed the opinion of a lot of people that make their bones in this business. It is unanimous. People believe he's not getting a certain amount of tough sparring because one thing sparring will do, and it has to be very, very contained. It can't turn into a gym war. But you got to face good enough guys that are going to sharpen your tools, and they have to be able to hit you a little bit, and you have to be willing to understand that, hey, this is two-way traffic here at a certain level. I don't know if there's any other really good pros at Verdejo's gym, maybe Christopher Diaz, and I don't know how much they work together. But I was at Carson today at The Rock, and I'm seeing guys like Oscar Valdez, Mick Conlon, and Jesse Magdaleno get tough work with fellow prospects. They will eventually spar with each other, and you could tell iron sharpens iron. I don't know if that exists for Felix Verdejo in Puerto Rico.
You know what the funny thing is, Steve? When it started, Pitufo was the sideshow. Now, Verdejo is the sideshow. That's very curious. And two more things, guys. I'm a little better because we got a Puerto Rican that won an eliminator. His name is Tito Acosta. He fight at 108 pounds. Angel Acosta is his name. You got a chance to see him. He has 17-0, 17-0, and he can bang. He may not have the greatest technique, but he can punch. So you got a chance to see him. He's going to fight for a title at 108. And one more thing, guys. You talk about Canelo Golovkin in September if it happens. Unless the Canelo people accept that Golovkin is going to have a part of the pay-per-view, I don't think it happens. If you ask me, the fight that is going to happen in September at the Independence Day is going to be Marcus Cotto, no Canelo Golovkin.
Well, I find it alarming that Canelo now is going public saying Golovkin's not being fair, this, and that. And meanwhile, I think it's unprecedented that a pay-per-view fighter of this level, you're asking an opponent not to get a percentage of the upside. So the question is, are they dealing in good faith?
And Booker, I got Kell Brook my split decision. I think it's a close fight. If they fight, I guess they're all fans, but don't think in England, in a 7-5 fight, they're all fans get the decision.
All right. Well, listen, it's great to hear back from you. We miss your voice. Javier, don't be a stranger.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate you.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Dave, are you a little bit worried that Canelo now is speaking so publicly on the contract negotiations for the Golovkin fight? My understanding was there was supposed to be a gag order because, let's be honest, when you go so public with these issues, what really happens? Most of the time, it ain't good.
Well, I think that Canelo's taking a script from being a politician. You know, by trying to pass blame, get people on his side to go on like, yeah, look, Triple G's now asking for too much. He's not deserved, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's the note that he's trying to pass to the back of the class. And are we buying it? That's the real question. Are fight fans, are we buying into that?
Well, Dave, if Golden Boy and Canelo don't make the fight, and this is not to put the blame or the onus all on them. It takes two not to tango.
Right.
Last year, people were outraged when he dropped the BC title. Then they said, we'll fight him next year. Then it became, well, not next May, but then next September. So, okay, so they basically set this deadline. Let's say that passes without a fight. What's the public reaction towards Golden Boy and Canelo?
Oh, wow. I won't be surprised there are going to be some protesting in front of the Golden Boy office if that happens, you know?
Okay. Well, can I just say something right now, folks? Don't block the traffic on Wilshire, okay?
Please.
Just safely protest on the sidewalk. No need to disrupt everyone else's lives, okay? 347-215-7598. Later on, we'll have the fight review, fight preview, and we have some more news and notes on the next round. David Duenas with Steve Kim. Dave, who's next?
Let's go. Area code 530. You're on live right now in the next round. What's on your mind?
Hello, Steve and Dave.
Robbie, what's going on?
First of all, with Adrian Broner, he's a case that can't be figured out. His best weight is probably 140, but he says he for whatever reason, he doesn't make that weight too well, so he moves up to 147. But every time he's been at 147, he hasn't looked impressive. Let's face it, Gabriel's favorite fighter, Paulie Malignaggi, gave him a death fight that was very close on the scorecards. Then Maidana basically tore him apart. Porter won. I mean, the only thing Broner did was knock him down in the 12th round, but he didn't keep him down. I don't know how you read this guy because I really don't know how seriously he takes his career. 140 is probably his best weight. This is a setup fight, in my opinion. He's got it at 147 because he knows it'll be an easier fight for him, and he'll win it. But my question is, as far as the problem is concerned, and believe me, he's a problem. That's why we have a feature on our show. We call it the Adrian Broner Train Wreck of the Week. We feature one person each week that gets into serious trouble. And Broner's been on our list more than once.
So his nickname is not the problem. It should be Amtrak.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
My problem with this fight is, yeah, it's a hometown fight. He's probably going to win it. But what's his future? Because I don't know how serious he is about a career. And this is a guy who's won four different titles in four different weight classes. And normally when somebody's accomplished that, you don't have to question their love for the sport.
No, you don't. And this is why sometimes, what did Benjamin Franklin once say? There are lies, damn lies, and statistics. Go back to the four belts that Broner has won. But look deeper. Look at who he beat to attain those titles. Not a lot of Hall of Famers are pound-for-pound guys. So, again, that's why I always tell people, look beyond the surface.
The one thing about Broner, too, is this, really quick, Robbie, I used to hear this a lot back in the early 90s, you know, this about a sale pitch. If you can get your pitch across and you make them believe it, you're okay with it. But if you don't believe your own pitch, everybody else is going to see through it. And that's the one thing about Broner is that even when he's pitching that he's going to, you know, I'm taking it serious. When he was saying all that nonsense, I was sitting there going, I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it. Calling him Amtrak, absolutely. You know, the only thing is he's not a one-stop shop guy when it comes to the buffet. We could see it. It's obvious. He's not able to cut the weight. He's going around that buffet, and it's almost like he's got the promoter's frame now. You know, he's really comfortable with trying to sell that, not trying to sell the fighter.
Yeah.
Dave, you're a parent, right?
I try to be. I try.
Well, no, you're a good one, because I saw the first car that you got for your son that you posted. You're a damn good parent. But here's my point, okay, is that there's been a lot of enabling of Adrian Broner from the beginning,
right.
And most notably the Vicente Escobedo fight. And you know this, Dave, and you can appreciate this. As a kid from the very beginning, if these kids do not do their chores but you still give them the allowance, and then later on they keep breaking curfew – by a half hour, then an hour, then an hour and a half. Then their report cards go from A and B's to C's and D's, but you still let it go and you give them that nice car at age 18. Can I tell you something? At age 25, if they're unemployed and not doing anything with their lives and don't have a job and just want to sleep in and smoke dope in their room all day long, guess what?
What? Mm-hmm.
You did that as a parent. There was poor parenting here. The adult
really
refused to take action long ago, and now this is what they have.
You know, as an adult, you don't even have to be a parent, and we're all over our 40s. You know exactly what kind of a person you're going to be when you hit 13 to 15. If you're one of those kind of kids that didn't have any ambition or didn't even try to do anything with your life, and you wanted to let it get past, you know, you wanted to pass the time, that's pretty much how you're going to end up as an adult. A guy that's just going to try to pass time and try to get away with things and just kind of maneuver into the crowd and blend into it. That's what Adrian Broner is. He's that kind of a guy. You know, everything's been given to him, and you know what? That's how he looks at it. He continues to do that. Hey, just give it to me. Give it to me. It's on him.
That's why, guys, he has the perfect nickname for himself, because he's a major problem. And boxing people who don't know how to deal with him have just given him what he's wanted, and now he's at the stage of his career. Okay, he's going to win this fight, but then what are you going to accomplish? Because every time you've stepped up your class at 147, you have failed miserably. So
you know, I like Broner. He's the type of guy that amuses me. We need more characters like this, but he is what he is. But I think the die has been cast. He'll always let you down to a certain degree. He's not the next Mayweather. But I just have one request. Can we stop with the annual stories of the new grown-up Adrian Broner? This is Zab Judah 2.0. He is what he is. So, Kriegel,
exactly.
Stop with the Roy Firestone tear-jerking interviews, please. Anyway, Robbie, we got to run, okay?
Yeah.
Okay,
and,
all right.
And to be honest, do we really want to see him change? I don't. I don't
no.
want to see him change. You know,
no.
I like the
I like
train
him.
Wreck. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Long as I'm not a passenger, all aboard.
Exactly. Exactly. I actually like to watch the news to actually see that there's other people out there that have got it shittier than me. And when I watch Adrian Broner, I go, good. I'm glad that somebody else is suffering. I'm not the only one. Let's go to area code 405. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hello. How are you guys doing tonight? Santos from Oklahoma.
Santos, Boomer Sooner.
Nah, first thing, Steve, I listened to that interview with you and Mario Lopez on the three knockdown rules. Egas and that guy has a good background listening to when he came over here. And that guy is the American dream if you look at it.
No, he is, and he gave me my favorite quote in boxing in talking about moving Vasyl Lomachenko quickly as he did and his prospects in general. He says, if you can't fight today, you can't fight tomorrow. So
yeah,
he is not Elizabeth Shue. He is not babysitting his fighters.
No, there's no divas in that stable. There's fighters, like you say. And I want to talk about the Gennady Golovkin. Hopefully it gets made in Kazakhstan. Billy Joe Saunders has really no other option. He has his, like our guys pointed out, his WBO mandatory is up, and he can't really, if he loses that fight, he loses all the money.
Right.
So
Santos, here's the reality. BJ Saunders against a Kurt Size can make this much money. I'm assuming that against Gennady Golovkin in Kazakhstan, he can make this much money times five. Now, I'm the rare Asian who's not good at math, but give me the one that says this much money times five. That's a much better offer.
Yeah. And Gennady Golovkin would be willing to give him pretty much a pretty good chunk of the money just to get the last belt. Stop the bullshit before Canelo gets his hands on it.
Listen, they had to overpay Lemieux for the belt, and I do believe that they're willing to quote-unquote overpay for the WBO belt. I mean, listen, they've had that hashtag for at least 3 years, all the belts, and I really believe Golovkin looks at it as a piece of history because, let's face it, in the four-belt system, which has been around for about, 30, 35 years, there's not been that many fighters that have had the WBO, WBA, IBF, and WBC straps all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one last thing, Steve and Dave. Steve, I seen that you were in Big Bear last week, I think.
Wednesday.
I seen you on your Instagram. And Alex Acero's here, he's from Oklahoma. What do you like in him? What do you like? What do you see in him that you like?
Oh, I like him.
In him.
Rough, rugged kid, and I think he's sharpening up his tools. And the thing is, to be up there in Big Bear, especially with Abel Sanchez, who runs a very tight ship, he wants to be up there. And you have to have a thirst for knowledge and a respect for the game. And he really says, Steve, it's like going to college. This is like a dorm. There's not a lot to do out here. You can't go down the mountain every day and go to L.A. and go to the beach. He's there for the right reasons. And I think that his style and temperament fit what Abel Sanchez likes in fighters. And I get the sense that he is growing out there, and he'll be fighting March 17th on the Mick Conlon pro debut card. And I think he's going to make a very nice run in between 140 and 147. Fan-friendly, aggressive television fighter.
Yeah, and one more thing. Like you said before, Steve, all the fighters see Gennady Golovkin following orders. It's kind of like the Spurs with Tim Duncan. All the players seen Tim Duncan taking orders from Popovich, and Tim Duncan not saying anything. Kind of like they see it like, well, Tim Duncan's following orders, so we have to.
There's no doubt. Listen, that's a great analogy because if Abel Sanchez is Pop, then Gennady Golovkin is the big fundamental. And it makes a big difference in any team sport or any sport. When your best athlete or performer sets an example, everyone else falls in line. Santos, thank you for the call.
Thank you, guys.
Here's a tweet from Evan Young speaking about Broner, Dave. It says, it's true. It's the flawed characters, personalities, and styles that make it fun. If everyone was a robot, what fun would that be? I don't disagree one iota with that, Dave.
Absolutely not. You know, it's just like in Mayorga. We knew what we were going to get with him. We knew that he wasn't going to win, but we still tuned in to watch. Watch what's going to happen next. How he was going to be taken out, or if he was going to get lucky the way he did with Brendan Force. So,
and here's two more tweets from Mr. At Boxing Forecast. Granados can loosen up on the diet as well. He's training in full thrust, first time ever, pulling out all the stops he can win. Broner is stronger, but not the sharpshooter Imam is, and Granados' work rate will be off the charts, will be more than double the problem. You know what? I don't disagree. In talking to Granados, he says, Steve, there's no excuses. I'm good. I'm okay. I'm here to win the fight. Listen, Granados is one of those guys, as Amir Imam found out. If you don't take him seriously, you have a serious, no pun intended, problem.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you do. You know, but I still go back with that weight with Adrian Broner is – with Granado, I'm wondering, because that he does like to punch with a lot of volume, and Broner having that extra padding, like I keep saying, extra padding on him, pushing him back. Because as we all know, you know, when you're able to push a fighter back, Steve, and the fighter has to use their legs more than they would want to, you get tired out a lot quicker. And with added pounds, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Dave, it's very simple. Would you rather walk uphill or downhill? And being pushed back in the ring, it really is like going uphill. Here's one last tweet from Robert, at Rob Knows. Now that Nacho Bedestein is at the helm for Chavez Jr., do you think he could keep him disciplined and also drink his own urine? Lulz. Okay, the urine, I don't think so. Dave, it's my opinion that Nacho Bedestein, a Hall of Fame trainer, his legacy is set. But you know what?
Oh, yes.
I think it's a bad fit.
It is.
Bedestein teaches a certain style, counterpunching, precision, working from the outside, timing. That's not Chavez's game, and that's not how he's going to beat Canelo. So you're with me. You think it's a bad fit.
It's a bad fit. I mean, I mentioned this last week on Leaving the Ring. I said, you know who would have been a much better fit, but it would have blown the top head of Twitter, would have been Javier Capatillo. That guy would have been a better fit.
Oh, jeez.
You know, because the fact that, look, I've always said that this kid, you know, Chavez Jr. and Canelo can turn out to be the light version of Cotto and Margarito all over again. You know, Chavez needs to do exactly what Chavez does now. Come forward, throw punches, and use his weight to push the guy back. Canelo has got to box. He's got to be the mover in this one here. With it just makes no sense to have Nacho try to change this guy's stripes and make him into something he's never going to be. And it's too soon. To be with Nacho, you got to be with him at least maybe 3-4 fights so that you can see exactly what Nacho's explaining. I just don't see it happening. I think it's just going to be too much confusion for Chavez Jr.
347-215-7598. We'll take one more call before the top of the hour and the fight review, Dave.
Let's go with area code 281. You're on live right now on the
net. Hey, good evening, guys. This is Nate from Houston.
Nate, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here. Hey, didn't the Brook and Golovkin fight get done on pretty short notice? I mean, wasn't there only
basically what Tom Loeffler and Eddie Hearn did after wasting about a month or so with Chris Eubank. They got a new bottle of whiteout, and wherever Chris Eubank's name was, they just splotched out his name and put in Kell Brook, and voila, you had a date.
Yeah, but wasn't it like only like a month before, or maybe a month and a half or something? I mean,
I think it was about 6-7 weeks. It was about 6-7 weeks, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and so I don't think you're talking about can Golovkin come back down. You know, in that short of time period, he didn't add any muscle mass. I mean, I think it's, I think back to that conversation that you had with Freddie Roach talking about Pacquiao and not having to make weight and just being, eating instead, right? And being stronger to heavier weight. So I don't really think that Brooke had any opportunity to put on any actual muscle mass for that. So coming back down, I don't think it's going to be any big deal. I think it's just going to
be. Well, you know what they say. That's why God created diuretics, regardless. Just saying.
So, so I mean, whichever way that fight with Spence goes, I don't think it's going to be an issue with making weight any more than he was before. But I think maybe the big thing is going to be that he knows how to lose now.
Interesting.
Yeah, and whether Golovkin can put that much damage on him or not, he still dominated him, and it wasn't like Brooke was on the verge of winning.
Tell that to the British fans.
Right.
they were plenty loud, that's for sure.
Nate, you have some background in bodybuilding, judging by your calls, and I'm sure you know more about this than I do. What type of effect does Adrian Broner have now in having that extra 5-pound cushion, given the fact he doesn't exactly have the most Spartan diet or lifestyle? And how much of a disadvantage is it for Granados?
Well, I think the biggest thing with Broner is just that he's just not going to be in good shape. And, if he's that heavy, like Dave, like you're talking about, then, he's not going to be in good shape. And so if the fight goes deep and Granados is actually making him work, then I think that's going to be pretty tough for Broner. I think you're going to see his activity go down and he's going to be just kind of standing around.
So, Dave, being in bad shape isn't being in bad shape whether you get those extra 5 pounds or not, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so in other words, it just makes it easier to make the weight. All right, understood.
Yeah,
I think the other thing with Broner, the bigger thing, right, is that the dude is just a plain knucklehead, and his career is on the downside. I mean, he's already seen his best days. So, and I think it was Robbie talking about any time he's moved up to 147, it hasn't worked out, and he said, I'm not a welterweight, so I'm going back down to 140. But then he doesn't go back down to 140 because he's just too damn lazy.
Yeah.
So,
all right,
I was disappointed he didn't stay in jail longer, honestly.
Oh, come on, Nate. That's not nice. Come on. Wow.
A big waste of talent.
Nate, anything else?
No, I don't think so. Other than maybe just comment on Chavez just listening to that, and it seems like I'm kind of becoming more in the minority and thinking that fight is pretty much going to be a joke. I don't really think that Canelo is going to have to move any more than Funfara moved, and it's just going to be. Chavez is going to run in with his face, and he's going to beat on him, and then at some point Chavez is just going to quit again. So,
Dave, you mentioned Margarito Cotto for that fight. I'll come up with another comparison.
I think
it could be Pacquiao De La Hoya. I really do. I know that Canelo is the quote-unquote smaller man. I think given the weight loss that Chavez is going to have to suffer through, because I don't think he makes 168 all that easily. Canelo has faster, more compact punches. I don't think either guy is really quick with their feet, but I still think Canelo's the bigger athlete or better athlete, and I think he's just going to pepper him right from the onset.
Yeah, I agree.
Strong
all right,
possibility.
Nate. Mm-hmm. Mm. All right, Nate, listen, thank you for the call.
All right, very good. Have a good evening, gentlemen.
Thank you. And Nate, not wishing well for Adrian Broner. Wow. Jeez. 347-215-7598 at top of the hour here. We have at least another 26 minutes on the clock. It's the next round with David Duenas and Steve Kim. Dave, this Friday night on Bounce Network from Toledo, Ohio, Robert Easter with a 12-round decision over Louis Cruz, and we have a new WBA Bantamweight champion, Zanet Zakayanov, outruffs Rashi Warren over 12. Do you agree with this statement? I think Robert Easter is the toughest matchup for Mikey Garcia at 135. with this size, reach, and length?
You know, I saw you when you tweet that, and I don't know if you saw my tweet. I said, I don't know what it is about. I like Robert Easter. The thing is that for me, it just doesn't seem like he's hatched, and I don't know if he's going to be that hard for Mikey Garcia to find, because the fact that Luis Cruz was able to find him, and Easter being so tall and rangy, you know, he sometimes, even with this fight, I saw him fight at the level of his competition. He didn't use the jab. He would curl up. He almost kind of reminded me of a Diego Corrales in some ways, where he allowed the smaller man to get in his space. So I'm not sure. Can he give Garcia some problems? Maybe. But I think the fact that Garcia has a better IQ of what goes on in the ring and how he creates openings and how he can pivot and kind of get you off balance, I think Easter may be in for a rude awakening if he doesn't learn how to use that range.
You know what? Again, I want to make this clear. I think Mikey Garcia at 135, even though he's only had one real fight there, it is a bit of an eye test. I think he's the best 35-pounder in the world. But Easter has shown some durability. He's got some athleticism, and he can bang. I wouldn't favor him over Mikey Garcia, but I do think he gives him his toughest time. And Zakayanov, who becomes another champion from Kazakhstan, Dave, I don't know if you saw this fight, but that referee, Gary Rosado, he was making me sick. Listen, boxing's already tough enough when it's one-on-one. That referee was literally manhandling this little Kazakh guy, forearming him, straight-arming him like he's Jim Brown in 1957. I thought that was totally biased refereeing, but with that said, I thought from the disastrous first round on, he absolutely suffocated Warren. I thought the judges got it right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing with Warren, he drops his last name?
ZZ Top. Let's just go with that.
ZZ Top. Let's go with that, okay? He drops him twice, but right after that, you know, the thing is that it almost seemed like they already celebrated a victory. And he never went back. Warren never went back to his jab. He never went back to try to use different angles. He just kind of went in there thinking, okay, easy work. I'm done. I'm over with. And then it turned out to be, now I'm in a real, real fight. So whatever Warren was trying to figure out, it just wasn't there anymore for him. So, yeah, it went to the right person.
And by the way, Gary Rosado, I thought he missed at least one, if not two, knockdowns scored by ZZ Top. Again,
yes.
It was 2-on-1, and congratulations to Ricky Hatton on his first champion as a trainer. And, Dave, what a fight on Showbox from Miami, Oklahoma. Ivan Baranchuk outlasts Abel Ramos. Baranchuk is what I call a baseball player because he pitches and he catches. I don't know when it's going to catch up to him. But this is a good, solid television fighter.
It was a great, great fight, you know. And Baranchuk, what I like about that guy, what I like about the kid is that even though he was getting jabbed, I mean, just majorly jabbed in the face, the guy barely even blinked when the jab landed on his face. And that's why he was able to pitch and land. When every time he threw that overhand, you know, it just came right at Ramos and it dropped him. So I give them both a lot of props. I mean, how many guys would get back up? How many guys would take a beating? And then, and especially Ramos's face, it was so badly beaten up, but you could just see the piercing of Warrior in the kid. Great fight. And for this second month of the year, I got to admit, we've got some really good fights.
And once again, Gordon Hall, the executive producer of Showbox, puts on another very good card, top to bottom. Dave, do we have any phone calls on the line?
Yes, we do. Let's go with area code 510. You're on live right now on the next round. 510, you out there?
Hello. Or not.
No.
There's a knockdown.
There's another 510. Let's go to another 510. You're on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hello? Or not?
Nope.
Bueller?
Nope.
Bueller? I guess not.
Area code 313. You're on live on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, hear me? Loud and clear.
Cool. Hey, man, isn't Broner the first person to ever lose his belt twice on the scales?
Is he? I think he's part of a very short list at the end of the day. I don't recall another fighter doing so, but he might be. You're right. I haven't really thought about that. So he truly is a history-making fighter.
Right. I mean, and his best win is Tali Malignaggi, so that's telling you something.
Jeez.
Easter. As far as Easter, reminds me a lot of Paul Williams. And you saw what happened when Paul Williams got countered.
Ooh, that's an interesting – I don't know about that one. They're both Paul and African-American, but one is Southpaw. One is right-handed. I look at Easter being much better on the front side with the jab, and I think he's a better pure puncher. I don't know if,
yes.
I agree with that one, to be honest.
Yeah,
Paul Williams did a lot more slapping, too. A lot of Paul Williams punches with slaps, and Easter's just really down the pipe. I mean, there's one thing about Easter. When he lands straight down that pipe, he does damage. So.
Right, but Comey deserves a rematch.
Oh, there's no doubt. And by the way,
Easter
now has to take on his IBF mandatory. And again, do I favor him because of the dimensions involved physically? Yes. But Denis Shafikov, I think, is going to give him hell.
Yeah. He's a tough fighter, man. I haven't watched Petrov, but he's fighting Flanagan, correct?
Yes, April 8th. And that's going to be a tough fight. I, you know what's funny? And I've said this before. Forget the belt, forget all that other stuff. There are about at least 10 135-pounders. If you put their names into a hat and just mixed and matched, you could come up with a lot of good fights.
Right. I mean, really, though, I was, I was thinking because I have, younger people in the family and this and that. And I think when I was coming up, when I first started watching boxing, it was the 84 Olympic team.
Oh, what a great team. What a great team.
So when you come up off of that, and now, I mean, if Cotto's one of your better fighters of your era, you didn't have that great of an era.
So in other words, it's like growing up with Rakim or Public Enemy, and now we have Lil Wayne.
Right,
I hear you. Yeah, I feel you, man. I feel.
Right,
by the way, looking at 135, here are some of the names. Jorge Linares, Yuri Gamboa, Terry Flanagan, Ray Beltran, Anthony Carolla, Felix Verdejo, Shafikov, Dejan Blatikin and Mikey Garcia, Peter Petrov. Some damn good fights to be made.
Oh,
I think
Mikey
beats all of them, though.
Right. So anyway,
give
us a pick. Granados or Broner? Who are you tabbing on Showtime?
I'm picking Broner by a bad decision.
Okay. Well, you've been heard. Thank you very much for the call.
All right.
347-215-7598. Dave, who's next?
We're going to go area code 805. You're on live right now. The next round, what's on your mind?
Oxnard, okay.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Oh, is this Nacho?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, welcome aboard.
Thanks. As far as the fights this weekend, I definitely like the Showbox card, especially the main event. I thought the main event was awesome. The way it went back and forth and both guys, putting it out there. Although the one thing I don't like about what's the Russian dude? Is it Baranchuk or
Baranchuk, the beast?
Baranchuk. The one thing I don't like about him is that he tends to throw these wild winging shots too often. I think they need to get him to kind of, settle down and actually throw a jab more often. He just throws just way too many wild shots. But, I mean, the guy has legit power because the way he mangled Ramos' face toward the end, it was like, man, that was pretty bad. But I give that dude a lot of credit. He hung in there and he hung tough and he got as good as he gave. And I would definitely like to see him back on, one of those cards not too long from now.
He reminds me a lot of Michael Casillas.
Nice. I like that comparison.
Yeah, there's
that
a lot
one
of
I
rawness.
Like.
Yeah, there's a lot of rawness to him and stuff. And polishing them up. I don't know, Steve. You know, sometimes there's some fighters you shouldn't even touch. You know, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Yeah, and by the way, I like flawed fighters. I like guys getting hit. I mean, it's part of the lore. Ivan Baranchuk is what he is. Will he hang a curveball once in a while? Yes. But is that the allure of Ivan Baranchuk, who, face it, he's a foreign fighter, may never have a big home base, at least in this country. He's going to have to consistently be in exciting, crowd-pleasing fight. And if he delivers that on a consistent basis, like he did Friday, he can make a nice living out here.
Yeah, and he's actually he's actually a guy that when they let him out of the cage, he does exactly what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, for sure. As far as the other fights, the bounds, I like Robert Easter, but to be honest, I'm not really all that impressed because he was fighting a C-plus level guy in Garcia.
Louis Cruz?
Cruz, I'm sorry. Yeah. And I really thought that at times Cruz made him look bad. He made him miss a lot. He made him throw a lot of shots defensively. Like, when he knocked him down in the 10th and the 11th, there was times where Easter got way ahead of himself thinking he was going to be able to knock him out, and he was never able to really land a clean shot. Cruz was able to slip and duck a lot of his shots and just made him expend a lot of energy. I think that if he fought Mikey, I think Mikey would sharpshoot him at some point. He would counter him and eventually, drop him and stop him, I think, because Easter just tends to set up the 1-2, and that's all he really has. He doesn't really have a hook. He doesn't have an uppercut. It's mostly just the 1-2 with that big right hand at the end of it.
Yeah.
So
he does terrible inside fighting.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The one thing about
Easter.
But I think here's another thing, though, I think we need to point out is that he was at his hometown. I wonder how much of that was a big effect on him and, the nerves and him trying to do a little bit more where he wasn't concentrating. I saw a little bit of a distraction with him, but I completely agree with you. I mean, he's just, like I said earlier, to me, he kind of sometimes fights to the level of the competition, so...
I think Denis Shafikov, who's his IBF mandatory, is going to test him. We'll see how much stuff Easter has. But again, you can't teach that type of size, reach, and length. Nacho, anything else?
Yeah, and as far as the fight this weekend, I think Granados wins that fight. There's something that tells me that I think Broner and his team are really thinking that they're going to be able to just show up and beat this kid, and I'm not buying this excuse of, oh, he got sick and he needs to add an extra 5 pounds onto the contract. I think this guy just does not, stay in shape in between fights. He loves to blow up, and he's kind of like Ricky Hatton in that sense, in that he loves to, party and, eat and everything else, and then he has to really, he really has to kill himself to try to get down and make weight. And so I think Granados wins that fight. I think he wins a UD 12.
Poor Broner, man. I mean, watching him ringside for Warren, I sat there and I'm like, God, this guy's blown up so much, Steve, that he has no neck. Like, I literally feel like we should, help out and put a neck on layaway for the guy. Broner has more neck. It's all shoulders.
You know what was impressive about Broner, though, on Friday night? He didn't sit down once during the fights. He was really into it. That is commitment and focus to your client. Nacho, we got to run. Thank you very much.
Here's
a tweet from Webfoot Chicano. Ortiz Rios, this fight reminds me of Bobby Chacon versus Bazooka Limon. Faded fighters that could make for a fun brawl. Indeed. Dave, who's next?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the one thing that we know that the genuine hate for each other, could sometimes override the skills. We've seen it happen time and time in boxing. So, yeah, absolutely. Area code 978, you're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Loud and clear.
What's going on, Steve? What's up, Dave? This is Jimmy.
Oh, it's Jimmy's corner. Everybody, pull up a stool. Jimmy, what's on your mind?
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing well.
Yeah, no, Broner, man, that's enough. You know, enough with that bullshit. 5 pounds. Well, look at Steve. You guys know, Dave. You know, when you're coming down to the end, you know, when you get into that spit in the cup to make the weight, those 5 pounds are huge, huge. You know what I mean? For him to just say, hey, fuck you, kid, you don't have nobody behind you, is just egregious. It's like you have no power. It just shows, you know what I mean? It's so typical. And, you know, the only sense of satisfaction I get out of it is obviously this kid isn't sitting down with Merrill Lynch after he gets his checks. 10 years from now, we'll see. We'll see when he's at the pawn shop trading and selling his fucking grills. You know what I mean? For
right.
Fucking rent money.
Well, you're,
you know what I mean?
Saying
because...
that he's not putting a monthly stipend on his 401k or his Roth IRA. Okay,
you know,
duly noted.
It's such a fucking cliche in boxing. These guys just, they don't think it's, you know what I mean? It's just like, they're 26, 27, they got, I mean, liquid, what do you think the kid probably has? A couple of mil? You know what I knew? You're 26, $2 million to bank is fucking awesome. But I'll tell you right now, you know what I mean? A couple of years, a good coke habit and hanging around strip clubs, that fucking shit goes quick. You know what
right.
I mean? That shit goes
yeah.
quick. And he carries an entourage, and he just did his, it's just, whatever. You know what I mean? He's a disgrace to the sport. Can I say another thing, too? Talking about disgrace, like,
please do.
I have lost so much respect for Miguel Cotto. You know what I mean, dude? Two
now
things.
What?
It's kind of a,
now what?
It's kind of a, it's kind of a slap in the face to boxing in itself that there's not – the reason why this didn't happen so much when we were kids in the 80s and 90s because there was always new talent pushing the old guys out. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
The reason why
yeah.
Cotto and Pacquiao can hang around because nobody's grabbing the fucking reins except for Triple G and a couple other guys. You know what I mean? You know, Triple G wants to fight 4 times a year because that's what champions who fight want to do, and he understands the sharpness of it. Like nothing, you know what I mean? I don't care how much you train, and I agree 100% with Verdeo. If he's not getting people pitching back at him proper, it's nothing. If every day is a showcase, you go down and beat up local kids, then you come up and you fight in the big fights, and that's what you get. I say give that kid one more shot, put him in tough, and tell him, you don't only have to win, kid, you have to win big. Because I'm sure Bob is putting a lot of money into that kid. But what else? So what else happened that I love? Oh, Shakir Stevens signing with fucking Bob. Floyd.
Boy,
that was a
people
pig.
Were, Jimmy, yeah. for some reason, certain segment of the populace was not happy with that signing.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Oh,
interesting.
He was being called Uncle Tom. He was being called some horrific shit. Just terrible shit. Why? Because the kid's intelligent and he says, geez, okay, I have a kid who parks 3 clubs when he goes to a strip club. Would you sign when a man literally goes to a strip club? He has to bring all 3 of his cars and park them there. So he actually
mm-hmm.
hires 2 guys just to drive his cars. Okay, so
Jim,
there you go. Okay.
Jim, wait a minute. Jim,
yeah.
in defense of Floyd, he also owns a strip club. Keep that in mind.
Right? Yeah,
girl
exactly.
Collection.
Now they can't get away. Great. more holes in the desert. But so now you look at that. You Shakir Stevens, you go, okay, this blowhard who, look at everybody he has. Oh, you're my boy. You're my brother, Broner. And then they do one thing, piss him off, say the wrong thing, like the kid from Washington, D.C., you know, the kid he has now, the only champion he has, I think. But he put him on a shelf. You could tell there was animosity there. Or do you go with Aram? 50 years of making the biggest fights and some of the biggest fighters in the world. It was just common sense. And, you know, my hat's off to him. Good. Good for him. He didn't fall into that bullshit.
Jim.
Another thing.
Jimmy,
yeah, yes.
I was told by a very good source that Rock Nation, the SSS Titanic of boxing, they offered Stevenson and his team a much more lucrative signing bonus. But they said, no. That's a short-term play. We want a long-term career.
Bingo. Bingo. It's this, and it's how PBC, I mean, just in itself, even if you thought, like, say, Al Heyman was going to be a, you know, good guy, right? You know, if I was pulling up to the parking lot for that interview with him, you know, sit down and talk, and I see 30 other cars there, I'm like, just common sense. How much attention is he going to give you? And if you're just not A-side,
mm-hmm.
why would he choose knowingly B-side sign with somebody who has that many guys? I mean, look at, what's his name? Gary Russell Jr. All these guys he has. They fought once in a year. It's unbelievable. You know, they might have made a little more off the top in that initial signing, but I'll tell you right now, at the end of the day, they end up with less money.
You know, I've said this a couple weeks back. I called Floyd Mayweather the Trump of boxing. You know, guys about me, focus on me. And that's all he's in it for. You know, so Stevenson doing that, jumping that move with Top Rank, I thought it was brilliant. It was, to me, it was the hip hop version of giving Floyd Mayweather the middle finger. You know,
absolutely.
Like, okay,
absolutely.
You didn't pay attention. You didn't take business 101, Floyd. You didn't take business 101. You're trying
exactly.
to buy me. You're supposed
that's
to,
all
you're
it
supposed
was.
To, you know,
here's what
buy
I think.
Me.
As soon as James Prince became the co-manager of Shakur Stevenson,
right.
Mayweather was never going to get into the Shakur Stevenson business. Also, if you're Shakur Stevenson, you're very close with a Gervonta Davis, okay, who no matter what anyone tells you, him and Floyd are not on good terms, okay? Keep that in mind. Also, if you're Shakur Stevenson, do you really want to fight at Sam's Town your whole career? I don't think so.
Exactly. And Bob, the biggest life character as he is, I mean, himself is a celebrity in the sport. There's no anybody denying that. Never puts himself ahead. You know what I mean? He's always, when he's got your attention, it's about him. You know what I mean? He always does that. And can I tell you, too, fucking Pacquiao fighting Abu Dhabi, Horn, come on. You know what I mean? There goes the whole, that blows up the hole, I'm fighting Jeff Horn. But you're not fighting him in Australia? Then if you're going to fly to Abu Dhabi, can't you fly Crawford to Abu Dhabi? You know what I mean?
Here's the other thing. Manny Pacquiao puts out a poll of, hey, who do you want me to fight? And he lists Crawford. As I'm thinking to myself, okay, based on the fact that Manny himself has stated, I need $20 million for Crawford. I've heard Crawford wants an exorbitant amount of money. I'm like, you might as well put that fight on Saturn or Pluto. It ain't happening.
Right.
Right.
Can I say something? When I saw that, Steve, when I saw Manny Pacquiao do that, I go, who in the hell is PRing for Manny now? Floyd Mayweather? Because that's what Floyd did one time, remember? You know, who do you guys want me to fight? You guys pick.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
And I wanted to add a fifth option. Just retire already.
Thank you. Thank you. But he's a cautionary tale. He'll probably – all the millions he made – listen, as anybody knows, at his height, Tyson was worth $365 million in the 90s, right? Hey, within years, he was fucking broke. These guys with the – you know what they got? They think it's a lot, but, real quick with Cotto, too, same thing. Retire, dude. That Kirkland thing was going to be a fast.
What about a retirement bout between him and Marquez that holds no interest to you?
It's hard for me to get in because I want to see a story. I want to follow him. You know what I mean? Like, is this too something? If I have to pay for a pay-per-view – you know, no, I want to see it going somewhere. If Cotto was hanging out, listen, I want to get one more belt before I go out. Yeah, you know what? I'm like, you're trying to become a champion again? Fine. And speaking of Cotto, real quick, too, because I know you must have been biting your lip, Steve, when you had Roach with you and Mario, and he was sitting there, and he said in the – oh, well, yeah, so I think, you know, Cotto did enough to win the fight. And I can tell you were like, you really want to think of the guest.
You
want to be respectful.
You know what you call that? You know what you call that? Boxing's version of alternate facts.
Yep. Exactly. He's just trying to sell, try to get a second fight. But no,
I
know you guys
are desperate. They want a big fight, and they have this exorbitant contract, and they're doing whatever they can to basically troll their way into a rematch. Let's be honest. Nobody wants to see that again.
No.
Nobody.
Nobody. He did just enough to survive. It wasn't worth it. But listen, I know you guys get a bunch of guys. And listen, real quick, too, can I say it now just real quick? These motherfuckers who are going, they ain't going to pay Jacobs because they're ducking them. They don't want a real middleweight. The same motherfuckers who were tweeting that out are now saying, yeah, well, Jacobs, dude, he's chinny. So you can already read the writing. I saw in a 10 count. That's where this is going. And that's sick.
Yep, like I said, they are more predictable than the episode endings of Three's Company.
Just say once and for all, and it is what it is, I fucking don't like white fighters. If they just tweeted that out, we could cut through all the bullshit. You know what I mean?
Honest those people have ever been in their lives.
Thank you.
I promise
gentlemen. You guys
I promise,
have a good...
Jimmy, I promise, Jimmy, I will tweet that to you.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, you guys have a great evening.
Whoa. Jimmy's corner,
all
yo.
Right. All right. All right.
Jimmy's corner, man. Great call, brother.
Dave, I wrote a brief on boxing scene for this. Sergey Kovalev and Main Event, they've reached out to our good friends at Rock Nation regarding an Andre Ward rematch. And to quote New Edition, Mr. Telephone Man, there must be something wrong with my line. I get the sense, and I think everyone saw this coming, I would be stunned if they actually have this rematch. I think there's going to be litigation.
Oh, I know. You know, I think another title of a song we could probably tag to it for this is a Fairweather Friend. You know, we have a segment now on Leaving the Ring, and I think Ward has landed on that, you know, segment twice as the biggest douchebag in boxing of the week. You know, I mean, listen, you know, you go out there, you fight the guy, it's controversial, and people want to see it. People want to see the rematch, and then, you know, you're putting everybody on a chokehold. For what reason? Where else are you going to go? And then you're going to say, I'm going to retire. You're going to pull the Sugar Ray Leonard
good.
Over Mount.
Promise.
Promise. Yeah.
I just think it's unfortunate that Sergey Kovalev is being held up here.
Right.
Listen, Andre Ward has never let a binding agreement get in his way. I will say that for him. Also, looks like Lucas Matisse, who has not fought since October of 2015 when he lost to Victor Postol, he is being slated for the May 6th pay-per-view undercard featuring Canelo and JC Chavez. We're now in the championship rounds here. We have 29 minutes remaining to us. Dave, let's go back to the phone lines.
Let's go back to the phone line. Let's go with the area code 209. You're on live right now, the next round. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, what's up?
Hi. Second time caller. It's been a while since I called, but I've listened to you guys pretty regularly. I just was actually catching up on the old episode from January, I think, because I had, you know, over the holidays missed some time to listen to you guys. But with that said, I wanted to bring up the state of boxing, or as far as what I think is going on with it as it pertains to regular folks. I have a nephew. He's big into UFC and we talk boxing too every so often. And the last time I talked to him, he really was clueless as to what's going on in boxing. His main thing that he knew in regards to boxing was the Mayweather thing where he was backing one of the rappers are supposedly going to fight each other.
Soulja Boy and Chris Brown, I think.
Brown, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm actually ashamed that I still remember that, I'll be honest.
And so that was the biggest thing that's going around with casuals. And I'm not an expert or anything, but I'm definitely not a casual anymore in listening to this show. So I talked to him about that, and that was his only real knowledge of the current state of boxing and what's going on with it right now as far as who's who, what big fights. And I also talked to my brother recently over the holidays as well, who doesn't follow as much, but is into boxing as well. And one thing we came out of that discussion was that UFC makes a storyline for their fighters and has exposure for them, and so people get to know them much more than what they do with regular boxers. And so they're constantly in people's line of sight versus in boxing, you don't have that. So you're never really developing any personas in the sport. Aside from the big superstars that you know, your Mayweather, it's Pacquiao that people know. And I think that fundamentally is a problem with boxing and why, I think they're really in trouble. And I really love boxing.
Well, I will say this. I think boxing had a terrible 2016. If you look at the first half of this year, I think boxing has a very, very good schedule. And I think you have a dog that is begging to be taken outside for a walk.
Yeah. You know, you know, the thing about that is, you know, when you talk about storylines, what's been going on for the past, 20 years or so, you know, for myself, well, the reason why I got into doing podcasting and YouTubing was the storylines are there, and you have to thank the writers. You know, if you don't like follow Steve or like Gabriel and all and the other guys out there that are consistently like writing, they're giving you those storylines. The difference is UFC is doing it on a visual stand, you know, stage. And you're right, that's what we're lacking. We're lacking that visual stage because now more kids nowadays, they don't go back and reading. You know, you got to be a hardcore fan to want to go back and read stories or be updated. You know, Twitter only offers so many characters to try to give a backstory about a fighter. So yeah, I agree with you that UFC has figured out that mobile to reach to their fans and stuff. So what can we do, Steve? We're not part of the executive TV. You know,
Listen, there are a lot of promoters who aren't very good promoters. They're sham promoters. They don't do their job. They take the easy way out. There are certain entities, though, for a long time, they've given us the storylines. They've produced stars. They have given us the historic fights. You know, when you empower those and there is no barrier of entry, that's another issue. The MMA, or specifically the UFC, is a single party, which almost represents, I don't want to say a monopoly, but a near monopoly. And you see what they're able to do. They do a great job of marketing and promoting the sport because it's all under one umbrella. Anyway, we got to get running. Thank you for the call, 347-215-7598. We still have fight preview to come. Dave, who's next?
Area code 510, you're on live right now in the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dave. Hey, it's Steve. Fernando here in Richmond. How you guys doing?
Fernando, welcome aboard.
Hey, I have a quick question for you, Steve. What's going on with the King Kong Big Baby negotiations? Is that still happening?
I think it is going to Bolivian. According to Greg Cohen, who co-promotes Big Baby, there's been radio silence on the other end. So I get the sense that thing will not be happening.
That's a shame. I was looking more forward to that heavyweight fight than the Klitschko fight. But, anyways, it is what it is. Thank you for taking my phone call. You guys have a good day.
Fernando,
you too.
Short and sweet. Thank you for the call. Dave, who's next?
That is it right now for the calls. We are caught up.
Okay, well, let's go to the fight preview from the Belasco Theater in Los Angeles. It's the LA Fight Club brought to you by Golden Boys. Robert Manzanares taking on Gamaliel Diaz. Also, prospects Renaro Gomez and Luis Feliciano making his pro debut. And on Unimas, El Paso, Texas, from the Don Haskins Center, lightweight prospects Jose Felix looking for a title shot soon in 2017. I'll have a story out on him on UCN Live this week. He will be taking on Jonathan Macello. Again, check your local listings if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us, hit me up at SteveUCNLive. And, oh, Gabriel Montoya is checking in here. He says, I hear Brooke is bigger than Broner. Spence by knockout, Broner by robbery. He's a disgrace to guys like Granados. You've been heard, Mr. Montoya.
Yes, you have.
Oh, by the way, Dave, are you as excited as I am with the announcement that HBO Sports will be producing a documentary on Andre the Giant?
Really?
Or were you not a wrestling fan of the 80s?
I was a wrestling fan. I actually had a chance to shake his hand. I was a little boy.
Dude, your hand must have looked like the most baby little hand ever.
Honestly, it was my hand, my wrist, all the way to my elbow, practically, when he had shook it, you know? I got to shake his hand, and you remember the animal? You remember that character, the animal?
George the Animal Steel.
Yes, I got to shake his hand, as well as Hulk Hogan, and yeah, Yeah, man.
Were you a Hulkamaniac? Because I was more of a Roddy Piper guy.
I was a Hulkamaniac. I was.
Oh. Okay.
I'm ashamed of saying that now, but yes, I was.
Yeah. If they would make a Roddy Piper 30 for 30, I think I would die of happiness. Here's a tweet from Robert, at Rob Knows. I see the Canelo versus Chavez Jr. is going to look like Canelo versus Angulo, in my opinion. That's another good comparison.
Hmm.
Is it not?
Yeah. No, it is.
And finally, from Evan Young as we wrap it up here, Granados is not going backwards from 30 punches around. He's going to be all over Broner. I get the sense, Mr. Boxing Forecast, it looks like he's tabbing Granados to me. I got to tell you, I'm tempted. I am tempted. You know,
I'm going with Granados. I think that I think he can do it. You know, it's just a question of I know that it's going to be one punch here, one punch there by Adrian Broner. He's going to try to walk him back. He's going to try to use that extra added pounds that he has. Those shoulders, those big shoulders, are going to try to, you know, do some punching as well. And he's going to look for the ref to help him out. And more than likely, the judges are the ones that are going to really be helping him out that night. So.
Yeah,
I'm going with, you know, Granados as well, but, you know, I think that we have to be realistic. So
the judging, I'm just telling you, once again,
yep.
We're in Cincinnati. That is the hometown of Adrian Broner. Do we have any phone calls, or should we call it a night here, Dave?
I think we should call it a night, but also just let people know about the Patreon. You know, guys, a lot of guys have already pledged with us, and much appreciate it. Just keep pledging with us. And if you can't pledge with us, no worries. You know, if you can, definitely go to iTunes and just rate the show and leave a comment. That helps us out as well.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. David Duenas, thank you for pinch hitting for Mr. Montoya. On behalf of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, till next week, goodbye, everybody.
Good night.